Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast exists because of the paid subscribers at DecodingTV.com. To sign up for ad-free episodes and early access to episodes, go to DecodingTV.com and become a paid member. Thanks to everyone at DecodingTV.com who makes this show possible.
Look, I know you're just trying to do your job, but I have a life-changing opportunity that's going to expire if I don't deliver this package in 1 minute and 17, 16, 15. You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, that's not my problem.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Streaming, a Decoding TV podcast. I am David Chen.
I'm Patrick Kluppick.
Each week, This Week in Streaming will cover a show that's new and interesting in the world of streaming. We'll tell you if it's worth watching, and if it is, we'll review and spoil and discuss the entire season of the show. This week, we're going to be discussing the final 5 episodes of Twisted Metal Season 1 and talking about Season 1 of Twisted Metal as a whole. We're going to start off by sharing overall thoughts, dive into a brief recap of what happened in these episodes, and then talk about some specific topics that came up during our watch of this show. You can find more episodes of the show at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com and find us on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube at DecodingTV. We often broadcast live on DecodingTV, so on the YouTube channel, so be sure to follow us there. And I do want to say thanks to a couple folks who have written in and shared their enjoyment of Decoding TV, in particular, particularly this week in streaming, the episodes that I've been doing with Patrick Kluppick. I'm really enjoying them as well, and we have a lot of plans for Patrick and my collaboration together here on Decoding TV. So, hoping they will all come to pass, but we really appreciate the encouragement in the meantime. The other thing I wanted to mention is next week on this podcast, we're going to be covering the new Star Wars series, Ahsoka, episodes 1 and 2 of which will be debuting on Disney Plus on August 23rd. So that is the topic for next week on Decoding TV, This Week in Streaming. It is highly unlikely we'll be covering that show week by week. But
tipping your hand already, David.
Well, I'm saying if we were covering it week by week, we would already be. Want another. Uh-huh. But yeah, it's possible. I guess you're right. It's possible. It could make the jump from this week in streaming.
We talked about the four worlds this could go into, David, in the pre-show, and sure, maybe one of them is not David watching 8 of them, but it exists. It's in a small percentile that possibility could open.
It's this week in streaming is such a young concept in Decoding TV world. It's possible a show could make the leap from this week in streaming to being a weekly recap. Hasn't happened yet. Maybe it will happen with Ahsoka. I don't know. I don't think so. But we'll see. We'll see. Okay. So anyway, looking forward to talking about that with Patrick, the premiere 2 episodes. And you will hear more about what our coverage will be on next week's episode of the show. So all that said, let's get into Twisted Metal and talk about our overall thoughts. Patrick Kluppick, I think you enjoyed the first 5 episodes of Twisted Metal more than me. But I was so enjoying talking about the show with you that I was like, let's finish this thing. And we both got to the end. So do you have any thoughts on the second half of the season versus the first half of the season? And yeah, just what your overall thoughts were on how this show ended.
It does help that I think probably in terms of character work, in which this show doesn't have a ton. I mean, there's characters, but in terms of like characters talking deep, like emotions, like characterization, like the first episode in this second slate, like is a lot of that. And I think it's probably some of the strongest work in the show between John and Quiet. In terms of like the overall season, you know, like I enjoyed it. I don't know, like Peacock's biggest show to date. Enjoy it, like for whatever like streaming metrics that we have no transparency into. I don't know what that means, but I'm not shocked that the show has resonated or proved entertaining to people, because I think that's where I landed with it as well. Is like it's a show that when it was on, I was enjoying myself. I was laughing. I wasn't looking at my phone. It's not a show that like I felt the need afterwards, like, hey, I mean, I'm going to talk to David about it, but I don't know if I'm going to talk to anyone else in my life about it.
This is a secret I must take to my grave that I've seen this show.
Well, that sometimes there are just a lot of the shows that I watch, especially these days. Like, I got two kids. I have limited free time. I have limited entertainment time, like with my wife, especially. Like, hey, when I'm going to watch a show, like, it's something like I want to be invested in. And I used to be in a place in my life where I could have the space for shows that like just hit at a different wavelength. And like the reason I'm watching them is not because I feel the need to be caught up on like the latest prestige thing that like everyone's talking about, so I can like keep up with what's going on. And Twisted Metal like falls into that kind of world, the show. It's like, these characters are fun. This world is fine. And like, it's breezy and it doesn't feel like it's wasting my time. It doesn't feel like it's punching. I don't think it's even trying to punch above its weight frequently. Like, it seems to know what it is.
Mm-hmm,
and it, like,
mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm here. I'm accomplishing my task. And oh, wow. 28 minutes have gone by. Like, see ya. Like, and although I did watch.
Another 28 minutes have passed. I'm 28 minutes closer to death.
It's not like I don't know how differently like we're probably reacting on the spectrum of like what that means, but I enjoyed the show being just sort of like a pleasant like popcorn bubblegum show. Like, it benefited from the fact that although I have a nostalgia for Twisted Metal, I'm not precious about like its world. Like, I wasn't like, you know, we'll get to where it goes in terms of like what it's doing with the lore of Twisted Metal and the responding to even some of our framework observations about Twisted Metal. Cause it seems like the show is not unaware of how people would necessarily talk about like the way they framed this particular season. But I just, it was a breezy, good time. And one of the reasons I wanted to even do this show with you was I watch a very specific type of show. I watch all the Marvel stuff, watch all the Star Wars stuff. And then in between is like, what is the prestige stuff that I can fit in with my time and complain about the fact that they're like an hour and 10 minutes long every time I watch an episode. And maybe some of this is like, this is like a rare show I didn't watch with my wife. Like, I watched it on my own and it would like hit a different mark. It's a different kind of show that I don't really usually watch. And I found that to be like really enjoyable. But can understand why that may not be for everyone.
What I'm getting is Twisted Metal is Patrick Klepek's filthy little secret that he doesn't want to tell anyone in his life about.
No, that's like me ordering 4Ks of alligator on and being like, no, what I need is like this like weird creature feature from the 70s in like the highest possible format on my television. This like, but it's, you're not wrong. It exists within it, within that sort of realm, which is just sort of like, this one's for me. And like, am I going to remember this show? Am I going to have to listen to these podcasts to remember what happened in Twisted Metal when season 2 comes out? You know, probably. Because it's not one that really, it's not a show that sticks. But I do wish it would have been the kind of show that I think maybe would have benefited of watching with a group. Like, it is a show that like I probably would have enjoyed like having a couple of drinks with instead of just like fitting it in like in my lunch times in between work and stuff like that. Like, it is.
But the problem is you don't want to tell anyone that you watch the show. So like that prevents you from doing that. All right, I want to talk about a couple things Patrick mentioned. First of all, it came out. I'm reading from Deadline. Twisted Metal sets audience record for Peacock comedies. Earns spot among streamers' top original series. Okay, so this is what the Deadline write up says. In the 2 weeks since Twisted Metal launched, it has become the streamer's most binged comedy premiere to date, in quotes. According to NBC Universal, the average account watched about 3 episodes per sitting, with some opting to knock out all 10 in a single viewing window, end quote. Now, of course, they don't say how many people
it
is.
What do those numbers mean? That's just gibberish. Mm-hmm. I can't believe them. that according to those metrics, that could be true. But it's like, if your streaming service exists in the basement and you've made it up two steps, like, are we really calling this a success?
Nielsen data says that there were 400 million minutes of Twisted Metal watched in the weekend following its July 27th premiere. Now, here's the thing, Patrick Klepek, that's so bizarre about the modern world we live in is, you know, Netflix will spend $200 million on a show like, or on a film like The Gray Man. And it will be the number one show in 55 countries for like weeks. And literally, I have never heard anyone talk about that movie. And I host the film podcast. You know, like, literally, it's like 400 million minutes of Twisted Metal were watched. You are the only person I know that's watching the show. So, yeah, it's the world we live in. Okay. The other thing is that, Patrick Klepek, I think it is safe to say that you and I are the biggest Twisted Metal fans we know.
That's probably true. That's probably for me.
I mean, definitely for me, you know a lot more video game people, so like you probably know, you know.
But no one's like talking about Twisted Metal these days. I mean, well, I was going to say the franchise is pretty dormant.
That's right. The franchise is pretty dormant. Okay, so all that said, despite the fact that I am the biggest Twisted Metal fan I know, I do think we did not serve our listeners well last week when we talked about the first five episodes of Twisted Metal, and we downplayed how much lore the show actually does bring out. Someone named Al wrote into decodingtv@gmail.com saying, quote, "I don't understand why they," he's talking about us, "I don't understand why you guys think this show doesn't use the game lore. Literally every show in the game is based on a game in the show is based on a game character. Quiet seems to be unnamed for on purpose for a future reveal. Seems like she's based on Shadow on a revenge mission. She even drives the hearse in the first episode. John Doe is an amnesiac and lost his family just like his character in the game. We have Mike and Stu that drove the big wheel stunt car. Nev Campbell is Raven. A handful of law enforcement officers drove the outlaw vehicle. Agent Stone and Agent Shepard, and the sibling cops, Jamie and Carl Roberts. Granny dead, Flower Power Twister. Like, more than half of the main characters of the series appear in the first five episodes that the podcast covered. I think you may be confused because the cars were the characters in the game.
This is my sticking point with this. Yeah. And continue.
And you may not recognize the names of the drivers, which change with each game as the drivers get killed.
Right.
And I think you'll see many more of the missing game elements appear before the series ends, end quote. So thanks for that email, decodingtv@gmail.com. It is true. We missed out on a bunch of those references. I have since gone back and like re-educated myself on Twisted Metal lore. But yes,
do every year. We gather around the table, we say our thanks, and we read the Twisted Metal Wikipedia entry and re-understand the characters. So I think that's my point there is I totally acknowledge that. That stuff whizzed by me. But they
I think particularly like the fact that neither of us remembered John Doe, that was a bad one. Like, because John Doe was he wasn't like a huge character in the games, but he was a character in the games,
right?
And he's the main character of the show. So,
and I guess, but my point would be is like I think what they point out in that email like still loops back around to like when I think about Twisted Metal, in my head, what do I think about? I think about the vehicles because the vehicles are the characters, and yes, there are drivers who have backstories and motivations, but. When I think about Sweet Tooth, like, I mean, Sweet Tooth is maybe an exception.
Yeah, he's an exception because his backstory is very vivid.
Right. But, but broadly speaking, like, when we compare it to Mortal Kombat or fighting games, it's because who's driving it? And those are just the cutscenes at the end of the game. And I want to see it, but like, when I'm thinking about the characters, it's the vehicles. And I do think that's one thing this show did not necessarily, it chose to. Understandably, because it's a television show where people have to talk a lot as opposed to just 20-minute arena vehicular combat sections like you're doing in every stage of a Twisted Metal video game. But it really like centers the drivers as opposed to the vehicles. And some of that's budget reasons. But it, like the vehicles felt like full-throated characters because they had to be because it's what you were looking at on screen in the game.
Yeah,
and that's not the centerpiece of this show. And so... I acknowledge missing that the drivers are like are seem rooted in the tapestry of Twisted Metal's history, but I also maintain that I'm can be disappointed that the character like the actual the, what I consider the characters to be the vehicles really were not like centerpieced in the same way.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I think our bigger issues were around how the show is not a tournament. And the game is, you know, and so we'll talk about that, obviously, in the recap up ahead. But that was what more of the comments were about, around, was like about the structure of the game versus the structure of the show. Mm-hmm. That said, yes, thank you to Al for keeping us honest. And there are like a ton of references in the first five episodes, in the latter five episodes to the game. We'll point some of them out. But yeah, I wanted to acknowledge that. Some quick thoughts from me about the final five episodes of the show in season one. And that is, I am completely baffled by the whole show, just in general. Like, I found the whole thing to be really puzzling. And I can't really talk about it without getting into spoilers. But, like, I think they... I'll just say the storytelling decisions they took and where they chose to focus their time. I don't know that it made sense to me, but maybe I leave open the possibility that in season two, I'll watch season two and I'll be like, oh, like that's why all that stuff was necessary from season one. You know, like maybe.
Supreme confidence in that maybe. I could just feel it. Just reverberating.
Totally. The show remains the same. You know, it didn't change dramatically in the end of season two. The last part of season one. And I have to say, I was pretty disappointed by the finale. Like, what it sets up for the finale is like set my expectations pretty high, and especially given what the show had accomplished prior to that point. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty disappointed by how it all played out. So I really enjoy our conversations about it, and therefore it was worth watching it, but can't say I love the show or would recommend it to people. So those are some of my overall thoughts on Twisted Metal episodes 6 through 10.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right. Let's get into our recap of the show. So episode 6 through 10, the second half of Twisted Metal. This is going to be spoilery. Here we go. Full spoilers. Second half kicks off with Quiet and John Doe waiting out a storm in a fast food restaurant, where in between sex sessions in a ball pit, Quiet reveals her past as a slave in a community where she and her brother were promised a new life with a quaint beachfront property if they endured 4 years of abuse and torture.
Classic just setup. Just capitalism. We're all here.
I just have to say that, like, Patrick wrote this. That is an incredible sentence. I just have to say that they talk about the beauty of the English language, monkeys mm-hmm. typing on typewriters forever. Mm-hmm. That is not a sequence of words that has ever been put together in that way before. Okay. So bravo, Patrick. Okay. It was a lie. The promise of a beachfront property in return for 4 years of slavery was a lie. And eventually the two of them violently escape, setting them on the journey that eventually has them crossing paths with Officer Stone. Elsewhere, Sweet Tooth continues his rampage against Stone's outpost, including visiting a prison where Sweet Tooth's parents' remains are rotting, revealing his own past as an exploited child actor on a sitcom who snapped and killed a dog on set after his parents pushed him over the edge.
Yep, those are words. I wrote them.
Incredible. So yeah, a lot of the back half of the season deals with backstories, right? Like, yeah. We get Sweet Tooth's backstory, we get Quiet and John Doe's backstory. We get Quiet's backstory with her brother. Like, did these backstories work for you? Because I guess Sweet Tooth was appropriately zany, but I felt like Quiet and her brother's backstory. To its credit, I was very confused as to why she was called Quiet, and this does provide an explanation, which is that her master was very, really badly mistreated her, so she didn't want to talk anymore, and that's why the name Quiet, you know, people can decide for themselves how well that works for them. But yeah, the tone has been irreverent, gross,
mm-hmm.
Lighthearted, dark. You know, it's kind of mixing all these various tones. How did you feel these backstories fit into that, Patrick?
I mean, like, on its face, like, the Quiet's backstory works and, like, helps inform the character from the first half of the season. I don't know that the show's, like, zany tone, like, fits as well for, for what's like, pitched as this backstory is, like, I don't know. Like, it just, the tone did, like, the story explained to me, like, as I wrote it, I was like, yeah, that all adds up. But I remember in watching the episode, the actual depictions of that backstory worked less than Quiet in the modern day reflecting on them with John Doe.
You know, because Quiet's backstory is incredibly dark, right? It's just really upsetting. But I think the show is trying to have fun with that kind of thing. You know, like, as an example, the person who runs that restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. He's this kind of dweeb, but basically he's this kind of person who you would think, oh, that person is going to be the first to go during the zombie apocalypse. If you worked with him, you'd be like, oh, in a zombie apocalypse, he would be first to die. But he's wearing a necklace of ears around him. And that's the thing is, like, as I'm watching the show, the sense I get is the people of the show are saying constantly, huh? Like, isn't this shocking? Like, wow. Like, aren't you shocked yet? Ooh, like, am I too edgy for you? You know, and it's like having a guy wearing a necklace of ears while wearing like a fast food sort of outfit is kind of encapsulates that whole idea. And I can't say it really works for me. You know, if Immortan Joe from Mad Max Fury Road was wearing a necklace of ears, that would make more sense to me. But like, but like in this show, it just is like, oh, like I see too much what they're trying to do versus it actually accomplishing what they're trying to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like I think they could have, it would have been less zany and exaggerated, but like if it was just, hey, they were promised if they worked for 4 years in this community and you'd get a property and then it's a lie, of course they'd want to escape. Like they were such a desire to fill the past with trauma. And unfortunately, like the way they explain like John Doe's trauma worked for me better than the way they explain Quiet's, or like how these characters arrive at how they're broken, like why they treat each other the way they do. Mm-hmm. Like worked more for me with John than it did for Quiet, even though I see how we get there and I understand what you're saying. And again, that's why it's like on paper, it sort of works for me, but in how it's shot and in tone, it was more like frequently and weirdly enough, as much as I was excited or at least interested to see that backstory, mostly I just wanted to go back to the ball pit. Because it just seemed like the most effective work was happening between those two characters when they're just sitting and talking to one another. I think like the strongest, like sort of like acting in a show that isn't like heavily reliant on that. Like it's mostly like the violent shticks and whatnot. Like when those two are like in a car or just sitting with one another, like it's the strongest character work that's happening in the show. And I don't think it's a surprise that like the movie theater scene, the ball pit scene, the two of them are like, you know, later talking in Evelyn about John's relationship with Evelyn, like that's all the stuff that works the best in the show and helps it. Like, it's not overly dour. It's like hitting a certain melodrama that works within the tone of the show. And I think when it leans too far into what you're talking about, it's like, we'll either go full horror and like make the audience upset, but that's not what the show wants to, like the show doesn't, wants to like have someone's head blow up and you go, ha ha. And that's just not what that setting is. That setting is like, this is messed up. I don't really understand what's funny about this. And that's the part that didn't really connect with me.
I will say, speaking of horror, there's a part when she's walking around the restaurant and she sees lots of people are missing their fingers and appendages. That was pretty upsetting to me, you know? So that was like pretty full horror to me. But one thing I do appreciate about that whole sequence is this idea that there's a bunch of rich people in this society living their lives completely oblivious to the devastation and deterioration going on around them. That does feel like a very appropriate commentary for our days, which is there's a lot of people in our upper class that are watching the world burn, and it's okay because they're getting their fast food and French fries, you know.
Which is, but it seems like the depiction of New San Francisco feels like a better space for that, like, than this. And and weirdly enough, all the times we're in New San Francisco, I feel we get none. Like, we get none of that. We get no. I mean, maybe because they're closed off, so they're not even thinking about the outside world. Whereas this community is actually interacting with the outside world, and delivering false promises. But like, I thought there was like a richer kind of vein to tap in terms of how they would have depicted that through New San Francisco, and they sort of just choose, you know, not to engage with it.
Let's continue on. As Quiet and Joe encounter the mysterious Calypso and pick up Raven's package, we're also given another glimpse into John's past and learn Evelyn's origin story, which happened through an accidental encounter. Evelyn ends up destroyed in a shootout with a long-teased holy man, during which Quiet attempts to convince John to leave Evelyn behind. He refuses, and the shootout ends with Quiet believing John is dead. Of course, John isn't dead, and she only forgives him after he explains how Evelyn helped him to cope. As this happens, the convoy they're in is attacked by Officer Stone, who is then attacked by Sweet Tooth, setting up the season finale of Twisted Metal, which starts with a vehicular combat sequence between the convoy, Stone's personal army, and Quiet and John. Let's pause here for one moment. You know, Patrick Klepek, you had talked about how, ooh, the Holy Man, that's going to be interesting. And look, I'm a big fan of Jason Manzoukas, and I thought he did awesome in the show. He was very fun. And the idea of Jason Manzoukas playing a priest character who wants to have sex with a car, like, that's a great setup and execution of that idea.
Very, very few actors can pull that off, and he is one of them.
Yeah. But that said, I think you were hoping that we would get... you were hoping that the Holy Men would be kind of a nod to some of the more supernatural elements of the show, and instead it literally looks like a guy's backyard party, basically.
Yeah.
Like, that's what the Holy Men... Like, I don't know what they had envisioned, but the execution is, it's a bunch of biker dudes gathering and having a little S&M alcohol party, basically.
Like, which is fine. Full respect. You know what? Live your life. Like, yeah. I'm not trying.
No kink shaming. No kink shaming here. But it felt a little bit underwhelming given what you thought it could be, right?
Yeah, and especially kind of given the long tease. Like, hey, like, I know that, you know, who knows what Calypso is, and who knows what you know, this mayor of New San Francisco is up to. But like, the Holy Men were being sort of like, there were breadcrumbs along the way that, like, hey, this is going to be, from my mind, like, one of the major, like, foes as, like, the show heads to its climax. And it was just fine. Like, I would have, like, I'd watch this comedian do whatever he wants. It's like, it's fine. He's here. He's just doing what he wants. And every time he's on screen in anything I watch, I am delighted. He is just one of those that doesn't have, like, a ton of range, but, like, just put in the right scenario, just doing what he does is always funny if he's got the right material. And so that put a smile on my face, but I don't know that, like, the execution of trying to set up, like, John and Quiet and also deliver on the promise of, or the tease of the Holy Men, like, that part didn't quite live up to what I was hoping after it being something that was kind of a tease for the whole season.
I believe Jason is a former listener of this show, by the way, just FYI.
Oh.
So yeah. But yeah, big fan of him, and I agree. You know, the way you described it in the first podcast we recorded, Patrick, was like, ooh, yeah, you're right, Patrick. Holy Man, that could be a really intriguing. And then the final vision of them is like, oh, okay, this is a little bit underwhelming, unfortunately. So anyway, Sweet Tooth is gunned down, but not killed by his old pal Stu. You said, but not killed. Patrick, how do you know he's not killed?
You gotta see a body, man. Like, that's a running theme for this finale.
We see the mask being torn off.
Yes.
And, well, okay. I think you're probably right that he's not. Let me put it this way. I think you're probably right that we're going to see Sweet Tooth again if this series continues. I don't know that that means he wasn't killed, though. Just kind of put that out there.
Look, hey, you want to get a little weird, Twisted Metal? Like, that's what I've been. I mean, it's not supernatural, so to speak, but when he does light his head on fire.
Well, yeah,
that part was pretty good. I really
want to talk about that. I want to talk about that in a little bit, but
yeah.
So Stone eventually corners Quiet. His long meandering attempt to kill her is interrupted by John gruesomely attacking him, prompting Quiet to give an offer similar to the one she and her brother got. Die slowly by killing himself with a gun or wait for the wounds to take him out. As Quiet and John drive away, we hear a gunshot but don't see the body. Wow, Patrick, you're really focused on seeing those bodies.
I'm just saying, you don't think he's going to come back with some gruesome makeup and like be in season two? Like,
I think you're right.
You cast Thomas Hayden Church for a reason. That like he wants to come back. I think it's like leaving their options open. Like,
I would agree. And
would
in
not
general,
be shocked if you didn't. If there's a season two, and it sounds like if they're putting out those press releases, like they're going to want a season two for their, most watched original comedy. The language of the streamers. I think they're leaving their options open from a storytelling perspective where it's like he could or couldn't come back. But that's why you see the body. I need to see the head exploded. Like otherwise,
I completely agree with you. I think that's in general, that is correct in TV shows. If you don't see the body, they're not dead. And sometimes even if you do see the body, they're not dead. You know?
Yeah.
Okay. As Quiet and John drive away, Okay. So the two finish the trip to New San Francisco, at which point a lot happens. Quiet isn't allowed into the city as part of Raven's deal with John, at which point Quiet shoots John and forces him into the city. John attempts to make peace with a new life, but ultimately doesn't find the right fit. The package Raven wanted was a quart of ice cream that she didn't even like the taste of. Raven reveals that John lived in old San Francisco and teases an opportunity to learn more about his forgotten past, and that the whole reason John was recruited for the job in the first place was to see if he was worthy of being Raven's avatar at a tournament being held by Calypso, who's promising, just like in the video game, to grant your heart's one desire. The season ends with a tease of the eventual tournament, including several glances at potential new characters, like fan favorite Axel from Twisted Metal 2. In the final scene, we see Quiet hijacking milkman deliveries and handing them out to the starving populations outside the walled cities before she encounters a masked woman who is claiming to be John's sister. By the way, that woman is Dollface from the video game Twisted Metal. Very cool design for that character.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I believe in the video game, was not John Doe's sister. So this is a new thing that they're adding.
It makes sense that they're probably going to try and come up with some additional relationships between characters to try and add to some of the drama. And David, they did it. Like, regardless of how I feel about the show at the end, even if I enjoyed it, I think I mentioned this in the beginning, was like, wow, you know which character I really like? Axel. A guy with two wheels strapped to his fucking arms. And if you are telling me they are going to put that in live action, is it going to look good? I don't know that I have the confidence of that. Do I want to see them try? David, I want to be alive long enough to see Axel, the man with two wheels strapped to his arms, put to live action. And I will watch that. You won't. You are not going to watch Twisted Metal Season 2, I don't think. But I'm going to, so I can see Axel.
If Decoding TV is still around at that point, if we're still doing podcasts, you know, I would definitely at least dip into the first couple episodes of Deep.
Okay. So. All right. Thank you. And I'm sure Axel will be early on. But that was a little bit more of like what we were, you know, kind of hoping for. It was like, hey,
yeah,
like that, like this show kind of has to be a success so you can get like a slightly bigger budget so you can pull off a little more of the like esoteric, spectacular like character design. Like there's nothing in this show's first season that suggests to me like, how would they even depict Axel? I just don't even know how you're going to pull that off.
So the finale.
Yeah. You loved it.
It all made sense.
A to Z. Like, I get it. Know how.
I was very underwhelmed by the finale. Because when they start doing the car battles, I was like, heck yeah, this is the thing we came here to see.
Yep.
And the car battle is fine. You know,
yeah.
There's a couple shots that look really terrible, but there's some stuff that looks great. Most of the car stuff until this point has been very strong. So I was expecting like, oh, this is where they put all the budget and time.
It was exteriors, right? Like the mall scene in the beginning,
yeah,
is an interior. And I think you can cut corners a little bit in terms of like your digital effects when you're working with an interior location. And I think you started to see a lot of like, I think you mentioned like specifically a scene where they approached like the
all that stuff with the missile, you know,
yeah,
and like that looked very goofy, and
it did,
and then the scene is over, and I was watching it, and there's still half an hour left of the episode. I'm like, what? I thought this was gonna be the final episode, right?
So right.
I thought, unfortunately, I thought the car thing was very disappointing.
Yeah.
But I have all, that's the least of the things I was baffled by in the finale episode. So you find that, you know, the big reveal, again, being super edgy, is Nev. You find out the whole package this whole time was ice cream that Neve Campbell didn't even like that much.
Ugh. Just a complete groan. Like, even for me, like, look, you can see me actively, like, giving this show rope. I was like, go longer. Like, it's fine. Like, keep going. Like, Dave ran away a while ago, but, like, you can take some more rope from me. And even that for me was just like...
The reaction...
It wasn't even funny. It wasn't...
The reaction they want to provoke in the audience is like... Ha, like, we tricked you. You thought it was important, but it wasn't. You know, like, we tricked you. And I am annoyed. But that kind of thing annoys me. I'm not like, oh, you got... I'm not like, you got me, show. You got me. You know, I'm just like, okay, you've wasted both of our time.
What's going to be a good gotcha, right? Like, the gotcha... Like, the thing about a gotcha is that you only notice it when it doesn't work, right? Like, the gotcha can come on through. But here... It just doesn't. It falls completely.
Yeah, I mean, look. Is there, on the one hand, Patrick, I do admire the level of trolling. You know,
the
because
entire
it's like,
point of this
the entire season
is this.
Like eight to nine episodes worth of content is like for no important reason, really. Like the MacGuffin was nothing. It's like it's. You know, interpreted really charitably, it's making fun of the idea of MacGuffins, right? Like, that's what it is.
I think that's
right?
charitable. I do think that's
it's
charitable.
Like, it's like, oh, isn't it so wild when the character needs to go fetch something for a whole season? That's so weird. So we're going to make fun of it by making it something that no one even wanted. Which is like, okay, I admire the length to which you went to troll me on that. But also, you could have had it be an actual important thing. You know, that's the opportunity cost is you could have had it be an actual thing of significance.
Right.
Now, I was actually almost willing to even accept that. But then what happens next makes absolutely no sense at all, because Raven becomes obsessed with making sure John is happy in New San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like setting him up on dates and making sure he has friends. That part was funny where he is like friends that are like really, really happy to see him all the time. Like, I love that.
At this one bar, everyone just goes to the, like, it's called New San Francisco. They can't show too much of it, but it's implied. It's like a chunk of a city, right?
Yeah,
like if not the entirety of the Bay Area of the downtown. It's like, but no, it's just one bar where everybody knows your name, especially John.
Yeah. And so it's like, oh, she's got to butter him up. She's got to make him comfortable for some reason that's going to be revealed at the end of the episode, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, okay, like, maybe she did need to test him, I guess. Like, oh, okay, like, I'm kind of like on board. But then she's like, and by the way, the thing that we need to do is you need to go out there and risk your life again. Like, you need to go and participate in this competition with Calypso. And I'm like, well, why were you trying to make him attached to New San Francisco? Because if he's like, I've fallen in love, I have a wife and a kid, that's when he's least likely going to want to risk his life again, in my opinion.
Right? And also, she clearly has enormous power, right? Like, has an army at her disposal, enormous wealth and resources for however you characterize it in this, like, you know, kind of post-apocalyptic landscape. He shows up at your doorstep with a woman he's clearly in love with at gunpoint. If you wanted to say to him, you want her in, you've proven that, like, you've made it back here. Like, let me tell you about Twisted Metal, which is like clearly what the tournament's probably going to be called.
That was cool when she named the name of the show and the game. I was like, oh, that's the name of the game. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, but yeah, but you're right. That's the thing. She turns quiet away. It's like, I don't
know.
Let
them in. Like, it makes more sense if they let both of them in.
Yes. What?
Have, like, build a life together.
Yes.
And then, like, now, and they still could have gotten to where they, I feel there was a world where they still get to, like, the arc they want for Quiet, like,
well,
her disrupting the
milkman.
The
problem is they want Quiet to be in the competition. And so, like, I don't know why Neve Campbell's character wanted him to, date and get married. Maybe the idea is that they're going to be like, hey, do you love this woman? Well, if you want to see her alive again, you got to do, you know, like, maybe they're going to threaten her or whatever. And whatever, they're going to use her as leverage to some degree.
Right.
And so that's why it can't be Quiet, because they want Quiet to be in the competition.
But they don't
as well
say that. I guess it's implied. And there's a little, not that you need characters always to spell out, like, especially villains, yeah. So like, ha ha ha, like, time to explain my plan. But like, in this case, like, hey, like, what's the plan? Like, what was the plan? I could have used a line or two that was actually like a cackle, like, just like how like Stone is constantly like, time to monologue. Could have used a little bit of a monologue from her to explain a little bit of the plan.
It makes no sense. Like, it makes no sense to turn Quiet away. Like, whatever your plan would have been, it's hard for me to imagine it makes sense to turn Quiet away, because let Quiet in, make sure John's happy, kidnap Quiet, and then you know, use her as leverage. Like, whatever. Like, it makes absolutely no sense. And then at the end of the show, I was cackling because you and I spent quite a bit of time complaining about how there's no tournament. The tournament is going to be in season after all this. There's also going to be a tournament.
See, Dave, for me, it's Axel. For you, yeah, Dave, we got you. Here's your goddamn tournament. This would be
like watching a Mortal Kombat movie and they have them all fight one on one for various reasons in like street fights. And then at the end of it, they're like, and by the way, there's a tournament. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what? And I'm trying to imagine, like, why would they structure it this way? Why wouldn't you have the tournament episode in, like, the middle of the show or whatever? And I guess I wanted to ask you, Patrick, what do you think of... They could have started this show with the tournament, or they could have had the tournament be at the midpoint. But instead, they're like, we want to give you tons of backstory for every one of these characters. Will that make the tournament more effective if and when it actually happens? What do you think?
Maybe, or at least that's probably the plan, is to give you some emotional grounding and character motivations. Why they didn't do it here, and like, I think it's self-explanatory from the show that we just watched, which is like they had to pick their moments for the budget, and even something that should have delivered something akin to the intro of this show, the climax, like they couldn't really pull it off. And I think it's like where you feel the strain of what the show is capable of doing. It's why they're trying to constantly get the cars into interiors. Like, it's a show about cars in which they're like, ah, these goddamn cars, like, how do we get them to like stop moving? And I think what you see here is a plan of like, look, we can't actually deliver this in the first season. There is just like, that's not what's in front of us. It's not what the budget is capable of. So let's focus on what we can accomplish. And that if it's a success, well, then you ask for more. You get to that season two, because by the nature of the tournament is going to it's going to be harder to get the cars into a fast food restaurant, right? Like, I mean, they'll still be like, they're going to still have to tell a story. It can't be 10 episodes of vehicular combat in the way that the games are just you in, like, there's no getting on foot and like going on little side quests, like a Grand Theft Auto. Like, you're just shooting missiles at one another. And so if the second season is going to have a lot more of that, then you probably like essentially need to justify that ask. And I think that's how you end up here. I mean, I'm with you that I still wish, even if they couldn't have gotten to the tournament halfway through the season, I actually think like the reveal of the ice cream, if that had happened halfway through the season and there was a different arc for the second half, would have even made that like bait and switch feel a little bit better, because the MacGuffin didn't end up being like the joke behind it wasn't funny enough. But I just don't think they could even do, I don't know that I would have wanted to see the tournament based on like what they were capable of pulling off this season. If they're going to do it, hopefully you can do it right with more money and resources in a season two. And so it really feels like a show straddling a line between what they've been given and like what you're then capable of doing with that.
Fair enough. As of this moment, as we're recording this, we don't know if a season two will actually happen. So
right.
We'll see. The one of the producers of the show has said like, They're not sure. Peacock has not greenlit it yet, and the writer's strike is obviously making it way more complicated. So
yes,
and by writer's strike, I mean producers not paying writers what they want. Okay, so one of the biggest changes to the plot is the alteration of Sweet Tooth's backstory.
Mm-hmm.
He goes from being a criminally insane serial killer to basically someone who murdered a dog live on TV. Which, by the way, felt very inspired by Jordan Peele's Nope. But I don't know, you know, maybe that was being made at the same time as this. I don't know. But like, there's a very kind of similar tone sequence in the film Nope. And I personally was bummed with how they changed his head being on fire. I believe in the game, if I recall from Twisted Metal Black, his head is on fire because he like died via electric chair, and or it's the fires of hell that keep it perpetually burning. But instead, he just lights his head on fire for basically no reason at all in the show.
And this gets back to that sort of kind of core concern I had early on, which is I understand trying to ground the show and then hopefully leaning into its sillier / supernatural elements as like the audience gets invested. Like that makes sense to me. But that moment in particular made me think the show doesn't want to do any of that.
It wants to have its cake and eat it too, right?
Look at this iconic imagery.
Yeah.
And we're going to have the characters go, how is he doing that? But like all it would have required was, I don't need a lore dump, but it would like, it, like you can imagine like Will Arnett could have been able to sell a line that is like, well, like, you know, the gates of hell and like, it gives you there's a way that you could have done it that right. I think like would have been funny and maybe great, like laid some of the seeds, but I'm actually more firmly believe now, despite the introduction of Calypso in a tournament, that this show is just not at all like, if there is like a Mr. Grimm, like it is not going to be a supernatural Ghost Rider type character from the afterlife. It is going to just be a dude with a skeleton like a helmet,
right? Basically no supernatural elements in the show at all.
None. And like Calypso is just this, you know.
He could just be the Jeff Bezos of the future Twisted Metal.
Well, right. He's like in New Chicago. We don't know what's behind those walls. All the interaction they have with Calypso is just a voice at a door delivers the package. And that strikes me as just a eccentric billionaire rather than some sort of like trickster, godlike, like Loki figure, which is what Calypso, acts as in the games, which is I am disappointed if that will be. Like they can't find some way to ignore, even if it doesn't go full supernatural. Like that's part of what Twisted Metal is to me. And so that is a choice to like kind of strip away that entirely because that like you cannot, I don't think you can.
Yeah.
It's fine to change the, like, I'm not very precious about that stuff, even with material that I'm like closer with, like personally, but like, it is like, I think the show acknowledging like, we're not really interested in, we're going to take the imagery, but we're not going to take the baggage that goes with it.
Yeah, yeah, fair. On that note, speaking of some of the other characters of the show, I actually was kind of a fan of the way they, like, basically the other characters in the game are pretty much Easter eggs for most of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet Tooth is obviously, like, a pretty major character, but there's that part where they go to that bar and they introduce, like, all these characters that are characters from the game. So, like, Pit Viper is a character from the game or a car from the game.
Mm-hmm.
Pizza Boy, you know, like a lot of characters and cars from the game are introduced into the show. And in general, I did not find it to be obtrusive. You know, so unobtrusive that we didn't even know that they were doing it for a lot of the first five episodes. And in general, I'm a fan of that approach where it's not like, hey, we're calling attention to the fact that this is a fit. You know, like I think you could watch the show, never have played a Twisted Metal game, and it all kind of adds up other than the finale. And I'm okay with that. You know, do you have any thoughts on like having gotten to the end of the first season now, Patrick, were there any characters or vehicles that you were like, oh, I recognize that, or I'm a fan of that other than Axel, that you were a fan of how they introduced those?
It's funny that you say like you can watch the show without having any history with it and be okay, even though I have a history with it. Like, I don't feel like the show wasn't forwarding a lot of, like, it was taking very basic parts of Twisted Metal, mostly a framework and some iconography, and then saying, what can we do with that? And I think that's fine because that's like Twisted Metal was an arcade, like fighting inspired, like arena game. Like that's what it was. Like it was. And so I mostly coasted through it. And part of the reason I didn't even notice those Easter eggs was because I'm like with you, like I liked sort of it was a true Easter egg as opposed to like in the first episode when like the box art comes across the window shield or John Doe does like he lists off a cheat code from the original game that you would input, I think, to get invincibility. And that's just like, stuff doesn't, I don't need that. Like be subtle about, like, if you're playing to the audience, like, know that the audience is smart and paying attention. And like, that's what, like, that sequence in the Milkman pit stop functions as, is like a way for, to acknowledge, like, hey, like, there's all, we know there's like dozens of characters, like most of them are not going to end up in this show. But like, here's us acknowledging like kind of the history without, you know, it's like, there's a different version of that where it's like Anthony Mackie being like, oh yeah. And like, I remember like, here's all the guys we're going to meet. And then it's like Pizza Boy vehicle, like Pit Viper, you know what I mean? Where it's just like,
they did that a little bit at the very end when they show like the cork board with all the little characters on it, you know, with the tournament, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yes. They definitely do it there. But I think they're purposely like, they want your, like, that's not an Easter egg. That's like, we're hitting the fans with like full blasted, like, this is what's coming, right, as opposed to there where it was,
Easter egg is you're taking a character or a vehicle in the game called Mr. Slam, and in the TV show, he has an enormous penis that he likes to use to smash up watermelons with. That's what we call a classic Easter egg. Right?
Yes, that's so good. That's how you do it.
That's the stuff. Mm-hmm. That's the stuff.
That's what I'm. That's all I'm asking for. It's just one of those. Once a show.
So anyway, great job with the Easter eggs. I'm a fan and now have a deeper appreciation for how the show was able to weave them in. All right, Patrick, any other thoughts on Twisted Metal Season 1 as we wrap up today?
No, you know, one thing that, like, one note I made to myself personally while I was watching it, and something I wanted to ask you about, was this, it's very easy, like, the show has a sitcom vibe, like, it's, mm-hmm, like, easy to me imagine if this show was made in a different era, there'd be, like, a laugh track attached, mm-hmm, to it.
Yeah.
And so I wondered, one of my, like, it was just an observation, like, I really liked sitcoms growing up, like, obviously I don't really make a lot of them these days, like, what is your own relationship with sitcoms, and is there any, like, connective tissue to a dislike of that sort of, like, style of, like, humor and, like, comedic setup that, like, partially explains like why this show didn't work for you?
I grew up on sitcoms, TGIF, you know, on ABC.
Yeah, Seinfeld.
I used to watch.
I mean, I figure unavoidable for the era that you and I, like,
right.
Grew up
no,
in.
I have a deep love of sitcoms. I think like the main issues I had with the show were largely tonal, some part with like the execution of some of the things. You know, the execution of, I think their reach exceeded their grasp in terms of what they're trying to pull up. It's such an ambitious show, mm-hmm, and it just had a budget that was not in line with what they're attempting to do. And so a lot of it looks very cheap. And
which even 6 episodes, like 10 episodes was probably too much. And I would have loved a show that was half and then was able to spread the wealth on the budget across those 5 episodes, because I don't think there's necessarily, even though they're half hour episodes broadly, I think you could chop the show in half, like keep all the best stuff and have devoted more resources to the kinds of stuff like you and I are talking about, like some of the visual effects and some of the action scenes, and still accomplished a lot of what they were going for.
Yeah. Like, I don't know that we need an Officer Stone backstory. Again, that said, maybe we're going to get to season 2 and all these people are facing off against each other. We're going to be like, oh, now I know why they told us all the backstories and it all. But I don't know. The backstories were only largely okay, I thought, for reasons we've already gone into. But I think you're right that there is a kind of sitcom-y broadness to, mm-hmm, a lot of the acting. It's like, haha, like laugh at me. You know, like,
yeah.
And I do think that is there, and that's part of it. Hey, I want to actually, we didn't finish talking about the Sweet Tooth thing. I want to actually revisit this. What did you think of Sweet Tooth's backstory? Like the whole dog thing? Because we talked about how we're disappointed that it's not supernatural, but like,
mm-hmm,
I was just like, wow, like this is a very interesting place to take. Because I don't, maybe it was from, I don't know. I did some reading about Sweet Tooth and I don't think this was ever part of his lore that he killed a dog on live TV.
I guess it doesn't preclude the same arc, right? Like, we don't know exactly. what happens. Right.
He could
after.
Still be a serial killer. He could still be a serial killer.
Yeah, he hunted down his parents and put them in a prison to rot. And so, little serial killer vibes I'm getting from this dude.
But I was just like, I guess I was trying to figure out why did they make his backstory that he murdered a dog live on TV, because in his backstory in the game, he like kills his family. He like kills a bunch of other people. And so did they think that murdering a dog on live TV would make him more likable? You know, that was my first thought. They're like, oh, we can't have him serial killing like young women and stuff like he does in the game. Let's just have young Sweet Tooth murder a dog on live television. That's going to solve the problem. I was just like, what? Did that happen?
I don't, other than the fact that it was shocking, but also like far less shocking than the much better like sequence in Nope, which is unfair. Like Nope is,
yeah,
like I loved that movie, like adored that mm-hmm. movie. Like I love that movie top to bottom. And so it's like, wow, like putting up a movie that I consider like a personal masterpiece of the last 5 years, like against like Twisted Metal, like pretty unfair. But like even contextually, like I think we talked about this in the previous episode. They're like, I'm not sure they're going to give a backstory. And I was like, I think they're going to give him a backstory. And they did. And I don't know that it accomplished very much. Like they juxtaposed it with the scene in the prison, which I think tells you everything you need to know. Like encountering with Stu, who is like the comedic, like audience surrogate character for this, like larger than life, Sweet Tooth. Encountering like, hey, by the way, like we're here and here are my parents. Do you want to meet my family? Like that tells me enough about like what was going on with this character that I don't know that specific, like, what am I supposed to get from that? Am I supposed to feel bad for Sweet? Like, I don't know where that scene is supposed to make me land with the character, because am I supposed to feel sympathy, or is it just like, I think it's more like he's pretty edgy. You know,
He's pretty messed up, you know? Like,
yeah.
I think killing a dog is one of the worst things you can do in a TV show or film. Like,
true.
It's coded as only a horrible, horrifying villain would do that. Certainly doesn't make you sympathize with him.
No.
You know? I don't think so.
No.
Oh, I feel bad that he felt slighted, so he killed this dog? You know, it doesn't... I think it's just like, ooh, look at this effed up backstory. I'm gonna... Let me just read here from... here's a GameRant.com summary of Sweet Tooth's backstory. Okay. Sweet Tooth started out like any other family man with a few kids and a loving wife. In his normal life as Marcus Kane, he worked as an ice cream man, seemingly taking joy in the delight he brought children when they heard the tune of his truck. For the most part, he was happy with the life he had, but somewhere deep down was a growing hatred of his boring life, and that part of him sought more. This inactive personality was able to convince Kane to carve out a mask which enabled the Needle's personality to rise to the surface and take over, becoming the infamous Sweet Tooth. And then, like, Needle's destroyed Marcus's personality by attempting to kill off his entire family, but his oldest daughter is able to grab a pair of scissors and stab him in the eye.
Oh!
You know.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Look anyway, at that! So, because he shoots him in the eye. That's mm-hmm. all. That's all right. Okay. You know what? That's a pretty good tie-in to.
Okay, but you see how that's very, very different than the dog. Thing,
very
right?
different. Very different. Yes. Yes.
Anyway,
yes.
So that was. I was just baffled. I just thought that was baffling. I didn't really understand why they changed it and why they changed it to that. It's just such a because they had a whole set. They built a whole mythology around this thing. So I'm just like, okay, maybe this will come into play in season two. But
I mean, ultimately, yeah. I think Sweet Tooth is like a fairly disappointing. I loved the performance, right?
Yes.
Like, I think we talked extensively about that. And I think that part worked great. But if you deleted Sweet Tooth from this, just ripped him out, nothing, like broadly nothing about the season changes. Like, yeah. Doesn't really matter that Stone's outposts are being destroyed. Like, he was still it felt like that was one of the few instances in the show where they're like, well, we got to have Sweet Tooth. What are we going to do with Sweet Tooth? Well, the performance carries it, right? Like, if it is a lesser performance, it sticks out so much more that, like, all told, Sweet Tooth is not very additive to what occurs. And that the reason you're excited for a Sweet Tooth scene is because I want to see what this performance, like this separation between actor and voice actor, is going to be like. Because in terms of actual impact on what's happening on the ground, like, he honestly functions like a goofy clown. Like, he's here to make the audience like laugh and go, ah, but like doesn't really serve a storytelling purpose. So it's almost like the backstory is there to like add some weight that the character itself is not actually exercising on the story.
Yeah, and I think they changed it just to make it goofier. That's honestly how I come down to it. They changed it to make it goofier, less disturbing.
Yep.
They're like, we're going to save that for the guy wearing ears around his neck. Okay. All right. Well, that's going to bring us to the end of our conversation about Twisted Metal Season 1. Let us know what you thought of the show. DecodingTV@gmail.com is where you can ping us. Patrick Klepek, where can people find more of your work on the internet this week?
They can catch me podcasting again over at remapradio.com once and many times a week about games and other topics. And then if you're interested in a newsletter I call at the intersection of parenting and gaming, it's called Crossplay, and that's at patrickklepek.substack.com.
And be sure to check out more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Find us on TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram at Decoding TV. Next week, it's going to be the first two episodes of Ahsoka we're going to be discussing right here on Decoding TV and This Week in Streaming with Patrick Klepek and me, David Chen. Until then, goodbye.